The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are wrestling with, well, maybe the question that defines our age. How do we all live together?
Yeah, how do we do that? We're exploring the core insights from Yasha Monk's really essential work, The Great Experiment, Diverse Democracies and Enduring Unity.
And this isn't just, you know, academic theory. It feels incredibly urgent right now.
Absolutely. Our mission today, really, is to try and distill Monk's central argument. He's essentially trying to map out how societies made up of different ethnic, racial, religious groups, how they can possibly coexist peacefully.
And crucially, stay democratic while doing it.
Exactly. That's the tricky part.
Because when you look around, I mean, think about national identity debates in Europe or the political divides we see in North America. Monk argues we're constantly grappling with this.
And the reason it's so hard, he says, is that historically, we just don't have an established blueprint for success. Humanity is running a completely novel experiment here.
That really puts it in perspective. It's not that we're failing at something easy. We're attempting something brand new.
And that urgency is key. Think about it. Historically, managing diverse populations almost always meant hierarchy.
Right. Someone's in charge.
Or separation, keeping groups apart. What we're trying now, mixing diversity with stability and genuine equality, that's radical.
It feels unprecedented.
Yeah.
And Monk gives us the tools to think about it realistically, right?
That's the idea.
So let's talk about the guide for this journey, Yasha Monk. He's a German-born political scientist, a public intellectual.
Now, a naturalized American citizen based at Johns Hopkins, writes for The Atlantic.
But what makes him particularly suited to this topic?
Well, I think part of it is that his analysis isn't just academic. It's lived.
What do you mean?
He was born in Germany, but to Polish Jewish immigrants. So he grew up navigating all these complex questions of identity, belonging, assimilation.
And a place with a very heavy history.
Exactly. A society defined by a painful past and a, well, constantly evolving present. So this personal understanding of ethnic nationalism, how fragile democracy can be, it grounds his work. It's not just abstract theory.
Okay, so you've got that personal experience plus the academic rigor, Harvard PhD, political theory. You can see why his perspective carries weight.
Right. And his previous book, The People vs. Democracy, already kind of warned us about how fragile democratic institutions are.
And now he's looking at the social fabric itself, the glue holding it together.
Precisely. And he brings a real balance, I think. Monk is known for his intellectual honesty. He's not really about taking ideological sides.
But he critiques extremes on both ends, doesn't he?
He does. He looks at the rigid nationalist right, but also, you know, certain strands of the identity-focused left that he sees as potentially divisive. He treats this whole challenge like a practical problem.
Like an engineering problem, almost. Mm-hmm. How do we make this work?
Kind of, yeah. Seeking workable solutions, not trying to win a moral argument.
Okay, so with that background, what's the core idea? The single thing he wants us to take from The Great Experiment.
It's pretty straightforward, but also quite sobering, basically. Building genuinely diverse, equal democracies. It's historically unprecedented. It's profoundly difficult. Mm-hmm. And it requires conscious, deliberate effort. We can't just assume it's going to happen or that it's the natural endpoint.
You said historically unprecedented. Can you unpack that a bit more? How did diverse societies manage before?
Well, for most of history, diversity was basically structured by hierarchy or separation. Think of empires like the Ottoman millet system.
Where different religious groups kind of govern themselves, but were still subordinate.
Exactly. Or caste systems, or segregation, like Jim Crow in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
They've achieved a kind of stability, maybe, but definitely not equality.
So the modern ideal, real equality in a diverse democracy, that's the new thing.
That's the radical experiment.
So Monk isn't really asking if diversity itself is good or bad. It's more like, can we achieve this new ideal living together as equals without everything falling apart?
Precisely.
Hmm.
And importantly, he rejects the two easy outs.
Which are?
One is sort of naive optimism, the idea that diversity just automatically creates this wonderful utopia.
Which clearly isn't always the case.
And the other is cynical pessimism, the view that conflict between groups is just inevitable, it's human nature, nothing we can do.
He finds a path between those.
He tries to offer a realistic path. It's anchored in creating a shared civic identity and, crucially, ensuring economic fairness.
Okay, let's dig into the difficulty then. Monk really emphasizes how new this all is. He points out that most historically successful democracies were actually pretty homogenous, right? The classic nation-state idea.
Yes, and this is where he brings in social psychology, which I think is really important.
Okay.
Monk argues we have to acknowledge a basic psychological reality. Humans tend towards in-group favoritism. We like people like us, and we tend to be suspicious of the out-group.
Tribalism, basically. It's baked in, to some extent.
To some extent, yes. It seems to be a deep-seated tendency.
So if we're kind of wired for that, is he saying we're doomed? Is the experiment bound to fail?
No, not at all. But he says we can't ignore it. This tendency isn't necessarily a moral failing in itself. It's a fundamental reality that successful, diverse societies have to manage.
Not wish away.
Exactly. You have to mitigate it, channel it constructively, not pretend it doesn't exist. The danger comes when political actors, political entrepreneurs, he calls them, deliberately weaponize that instinct.
Right. Stoking fear of the other.
That's when it becomes destructive. And understanding this reality, this psychological foundation, leads him to his framework for how things can go wrong.
Okay, so the diagnostics. He calls it the triple threat, right? Three main ways diverse democracies can fail.
That's his framework. The first, and obviously the most catastrophic, is anarchy.
Just total breakdown.
Complete breakdown into violent civil conflict. He uses really chilling examples that the Lebanese Civil War, the collapse of Yugoslavia.
Where trust just evaporates.
Totally. Groups retreat into their own camps for basic safety. The state is no longer seen as neutral. And you get that awful security dilemma. I have to hit you before you hit me.
Horrifying. Okay, what's the second failure mode?
The second is domination. This one can look stable, even peaceful on the surface, but it's built on profound injustice.
So one group is in charge and keeps others down.
Exactly. One group systematically oppresses others, completely betraying the democratic promise of equality. Think apartheid South Africa, Jim Crow America.
Systems of peace maintained by force and inequality.
Right. And Monk points out, even when you get rid of the explicit law of domination, subtle forms of structural oppression can hang on, and they keep undermining social trust.
Okay, anarchy, domination, and the third one. He says this is the big threat for many Western nations today.
Yes, fragmentation. He sometimes calls this the cold peace.
Cold peace. What does that mean?
It's insidious because it doesn't necessarily look like outright conflict. Society just splinters. Groups live separate, parallel lives.
Like people are in the same country, but not really in it together.
Exactly. They watch different news, send kids to different schools, maybe don't interact much across group lines. Social trust just erodes.
And then democratic debate becomes impossible.
Pretty much. If you stop seeing others as fellow citizens, as partners in a shared project, how can you liberate? Monk suggests that some forms of multiculturalism, if they become too rigid and only emphasize difference, can actually inadvertently encourage this siloing.
That's tricky, because the old melting pot idea, where minorities were just expected to erase their heritage, that clearly failed too, right? It was unjust.
Absolutely. It demanded unfair assimilation.
So how do you unify without demanding everyone become the same? Isn't there a risk that any push for shared identity slides back towards domination?
That is the absolute core challenge Monk is grappling with. He critiques both that coercive melting pot and the kind of identity politics that can lead to rigid separatism.
Okay.
And he proposes his solution as a necessary third way, inclusive patriotism. Sometimes he calls it cultural patriotism.
Inclusive patriotism. So what does that look like? It's a shared national identity, but not based on ethnicity.
Exactly. It's based on commitment to shared liberal democratic values, to the country's institutions, its ideals.
A unity based on shared laws and aspirations, like he says, not blood and soil.
Precisely. But, crucially, Monk stresses this isn't just about nice feelings or speeches. It requires concrete policy actions.
Okay, so what's the practical blueprint?
It really rests on two main pillars. The first is actively fostering contact and connection.
The contact hypothesis, the idea that prejudice goes down when different groups actually interact.
Yes, but with important conditions, interacting as equals, working towards common goals. So Monk says policymakers need to create the spaces and opportunities for that to happen naturally.
Like what kind of spaces?
Well-funded, integrated public schools are huge. Accessible, attractive public parks, community centers, shared infrastructure. Places where people from different walks of life actually bump into each other, maybe work on something together.
Moving from just being strangers living near each other to actual neighbors.
That's the goal. And the second pillar, which I think is so vital, is the link he makes between this cultural cohesion and economic fairness.
Ah, so it's not just about culture and interaction. Money matters.
It absolutely matters. Monk argues you can't solve these diversity challenges just through cultural policy or education alone. Economic anxiety, feeling left behind, that's potent fuel for resentment.
The US versus them narrative gets traction when people feel squeezed.
Exactly. When people feel economically insecure, their outlook can become very zero-sum. They become much more vulnerable to populists who point the finger at other immigrants, minorities, whoever, and blame them for their problems.
So things like strong social safety nets, broad access to good jobs, basic economic security, these aren't separate issues.
Monk says they are absolutely central to managing diversity. If people feel basically secure, they have less need to retreat into their in-groups for psychological protection.
They have more capacity, maybe, to engage positively with difference.
Right. It reduces the sense that someone else's gain must be your loss. So economic policy is diversity policy in a very real way.
Wow, that connects a lot of dots. Okay, that's a powerful framework. Let's maybe zoom out for a second and try to nail down the key themes Monk really wants us to remember.
Okay. Theme number one, I'd say, is simply the novelty of the great experiment. Just grasping that what we're attempting is radically new historically.
Which helps manage expectations, right? It's not supposed to be easy.
Exactly. Success isn't guaranteed. It'll be messy, require constant work. But failure isn't predetermined either.
Okay, novelty. What's second?
Theme two is rejecting false choices. We have to get past this binary of either total assimilation, the old melting pot.
Or rigid separatism, where groups live totally apart.
Right. We need to find that difficult but necessary middle ground, the society where people can retain their heritage, celebrate their specific identities, while also embracing a shared, overarching civic national identity.
Finding the balance between difference and unity.
That's the tightrope walk. And the third key theme, which we just touched on, is the interdependence of cultural and economic policy.
You can't fix one without the other.
You really can't, according to Monk. You can't smooth over cultural tensions if people feel economically shafted. Addressing material inequality is fundamental to social cohesion.
Economic security gives people the breathing room, the resources to deal with diversity constructively. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Monk's writing is quite direct. His book has some really memorable lines that seem to capture the core ideas. Maybe we could highlight a few.
Yeah, absolutely. The first one really sets the stage, I think. We are living through the most ambitious political experiment in human history. The attempt to build genuinely diverse democracies.
That just lands the scale of it, doesn't it? The sheer ambition, the high stakes. Makes you realize this everyday stuff is actually quite radical.
Totally. And then
Yeah.
there's one that summarizes his proposed solution. The choice is not between diversity and unity, but between inclusive patriotism and the twin dangers of fragmentation and authoritarianism.
Right, that clarifies the stakes. It's not if we'll have unity, but what kind. Civic unity based on shared values, or we risk falling apart or falling under authoritarian rule.
Exactly. It frames inclusive patriotism not just as a nice idea, but as a necessity to avoid worse outcomes.
And one more, maybe something about the practical side.
Yeah, how about this? A diverse democracy cannot survive on goodwill alone. It must be sustained by public institutions that encourage contact and connection.
Ah, so it's not just about changing hearts and minds, which is important.
But you need the structures. You need the institutions. Integrated schools, fair housing policies, public spaces that actually bring people together. Tangible things. Policy matters.
Okay, so let's bring this home. What does this mean for you listening right now? How can we apply this framework in our own lives?
Well, on a personal level, Monk sort of implicitly encourages a bit of self-reflection, just being aware of our own tendencies towards in-group bias.
And maybe making a conscious effort.
Yeah, actively seeking that contact he talks about. Maybe it's as simple as changing your routine, slightly patronizing businesses in a different neighborhood sometimes.
Or just striking up a conversation with a colleague or neighbor you don't normally talk to, getting outside your usual bubble, even in small ways.
Exactly. Small efforts to bridge those divides in daily life.
And then thinking bigger, civically, if you want to advocate for a stronger, more cohesive society, Monk gives us some clear targets.
He really does. He points to the importance of those institutions that serve as common ground. So, fighting for well-funded, genuinely integrated public schools.
Which is a huge battle in many places.
Huge. And supporting public spaces, parks, libraries, community centers, making sure they're welcoming and accessible to everyone, designed to facilitate that equal status interaction.
Yeah.
Those are the workshops where the experiment happens.
I can see the professional application too. In workplaces, right. Building an inclusive team isn't just about numbers or quotas.
No, it's about creating a shared sense of mission, maybe like a mini civic patriotism for the organization.
And designing work itself so that diverse teams have to collaborate as equals to achieve something meaningful.
That's the contact hypothesis in the office, essentially.
Hmm.
It makes diversity a necessary asset for success, not just something to be managed.
Okay. So wrapping up, for me, what really struck me was Monk's analysis of fragmentation, that cold piece.
Yeah.
It's insidious, isn't it? We often think if there's no violence, things are okay. But he shows how living these parallel lives just slowly erodes the whole democratic project.
It really underscores the importance of those seemingly small everyday interactions. They add up.
They really do. What's your final takeaway? What's the key lesson Monk offers the listener?
For me, the most valuable thing is what you might call structured hope. It's this idea that, look, we're not doomed to fail in this great experiment.
But success isn't automatic either.
Exactly. A successful, thriving, diverse democracy is a conscious achievement. It's something we have to actively build and maintain. It's not just the natural course of history.
So we're not just passengers along for the ride?
Not at all. We're the architects, the builders, the custodians of this incredibly ambitious, fragile, and ongoing project. It requires realism about the challenges, absolutely. But Monk argues it is achievable. There's reason for hope, but it's a hope we have to work for.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.